So I think this title is just the exciting title for this little workshop we've got here is, what is it, Online Security for Activists Post-Snowden, an overview of the threats facing progressive activists from criminal corporate state surveillance, followed by an open discussion of mitigation steps. Wow. Okay, well, there's not many of us here, so we'll just bang through it, I imagine. Who we are, me, I'm Alan Dawson. There's an email address, there's a GPG key for me. GPG key is very important, I'll be asking questions about that later. So do remember it. And this is my friend Chris. It's very important, okay, but don't get too worried about it, okay? And my friend here, Chris. This is Chris, this is his GPG key too. Okay, so the list here, kind of examples, the problems we're trying to solve. We want to solve these problems in a way that's quite easy. Okay, it's got to be easy and achievable for people without having to remember those long, complicated strings and numbers I put on the screen there. Okay, so kind of these are the kind of problems we're trying to solve. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to provide a threat model, okay, that we can use to, a simple threat model that we can use to assess the type of attackers that are working against us. Yeah, we can look at these type of attackers in a bit of detail. And then we can look at some tools that protect us against lots of these attacks. Okay? And I don't want to spend too long talking about the theoretical aspects of these things. I really want to go on and just show a practical tool that we can use today that solves many of these problems. Okay. And this one here, this problem here, this is it's quite an interesting one. It was in the recently in the local news. There was some people were arrested, and they were using, so this is a real world problem, and they were using instant messaging to communicate. Okay, and that was a key piece of information in stopping them doing what they were trying to do. So these are all real world problems, and this is the one I deal with mostly. Okay, this is my problem really. It's not a very big problem, but it annoys them quite a lot. But these are the kind of things we want to be able to solve. Okay. So I've got a simple model. It is a simple model to assess and design appropriate security with your technical communications. Okay. We've got four types of adversary. A citizen, a criminal, corporate, or a country. Okay. A citizen attacker. It's quite a weak attacker. They're not very powerful, okay? What can they do? We can Google you. We can try to find out where you live, okay? They can perhaps it's somebody you're sharing a house with, and they can try to mess with your phone screen and try to read your... they can mess with your PC, try to log on and steal your information like that, okay? They're quite easy to deal with. We know how to do that. We have passwords on our computers. We have disk encryption. So if they steal your computer... They can't read your files, and all computers these days support disk encryption, and it's very easy to install. Okay, and you have user access control. I mean, you have a password on your account, and perhaps you log in, and when you share your laptop with somebody because you're being sociable, you log out and they can use the guest account instead. Okay, so they're quite easy to defend yourself against. So you're worried about somebody in your shared house, whatever. You're worried about somebody you're trying to get to your data. Those are some simple steps to deal with. More interesting type of attacker is the criminal. Criminals, there's criminal gangs out there, they're quite well resourced. They're, you know, they send lots of spam email, they're interested in stealing your identity so they can buy credit cards. Okay. We know how to solve these problems as well. You have good internet hygiene. You don't download random files from the internet and run them. You don't believe all the free offers that you get in your spam email. You don't click on random links, okay? These are people who are quite easy to defend against also. But they're very successful. They're very successful attackers because there's a lot of money involved in it. So they have access to things like, they call them zero-day exploits, okay? So...
Sorry, what's that again?
Zero-day exploits, okay? Exploits that aren't patched, your computer's not patched against yet. So an example would be a new virus. Your antivirus software won't detect rogue Decepticon. Okay? I see a lot of spam email with attachments on it, and in the attachments there's viruses, and you can pay a lot of money for antivirus software, but it won't catch them. It's always late. Okay, so an interesting point is antivirus software worth spending any money on? Probably not. But okay, so that's, we have corporate attackers. Okay, people like Facebook, Google, ad networks, and these people are interested in tracking your internet usage around the internet. Okay, your web browsing usage. They want to follow you between different websites from one place to another. And this is a plugin for Firefox. It's called Lightbeam. Okay, install it into your Firefox web browser. And what is really interesting, what it does, it shows you the links between different sites as you were browsing the web. It's really interesting to see. You'll spend a bit of time on the BBC's website, then you'll go to the Guardian's website, and then you'll go to Facebook, and then you'll go to Twitter, and it'll draw you a picture of all the sites that you've been to and how they interact. And it's really interesting to see the link together. They're not separate silos that you go to. They're very, very strongly linked together by large corporations. And they can track you, your web browsing, across the internet. Okay, so if you're logged into Facebook, for example, Facebook gets to see every website you go to with that Like Facebook button. Okay, you don't even have to click the button. They get to see who it is, which Facebook user is going across the web. So they get to see everything. Okay, so there's some plugins that we've got that make it harder to do these things. There's ad blockers. There's a plugin called Better Privacy. Ghostery, and these disable these third-party plugins, these third-party trackers, and help you maintain some privacy as you go across the internet. Okay. And kind of finally, in the 4C model, we've got state-level attackers, country attackers. Okay, and these again come at kind of different levels. So, and mostly they go around things like traffic interception. So they'll take the data as it leaves your computer. Okay, they'll see the stream of traffic directly as it crosses the internet. But there's different levels of power some of these people have. Okay, so back in the Arab Spring, whenever that was, what was that, a year or 2 years ago, Arab Spring. Okay, we saw people like Sudan and Syria, places like that. They would. First of all, they would turn off the internet access because they have full control of access to the internet through their country, so they could disconnect access for large sections of the population. And also, they were doing things where they would insert devices into the traffic, so they would look inside all of the data as it was leaving. And also, the other thing they were doing called man-in-the-middle attack. MITM, man in the middle, where they would say impersonate Gmail. Okay, so when you were logging into Gmail, you weren't really logging into Gmail, you were logging into their website. Okay, and they would be able to take the username and password and then use that to log in really into Gmail and reveal your email. So, those kind of attacks, they're easier to defend against, and people would discover them because they have problems, say, when you go in the web browser and you have a little padlock symbol where it shows the HTTPS, the secure web browsing, padlock symbol pops up, okay, and that would say, it would show an error, okay, it would show that you're not connecting to the site that you think you're connecting to, yeah? And people became aware of that, and some of these things were discovered, okay? More powerful attacker are people like the NSA and the Five Eyes people, which is the US, UK, New Zealand, Australia, Germany. Are they Five Eyes? Anyway, the Western powers, okay, and they have taps into the internet backbone, okay? They can see lots of data as it travels between the big sites and the internet, okay? And they have broadband attacks with all these crazy names,
an important point is, and they're not global, they do not have global reach. Okay, they are very powerful attackers, and if you were individually targeted by these people, I don't think there's much chance of protecting yourself. Okay, but you can make it difficult for them. You can really up the level of technology they have to use for them to get interesting information. Okay? I mean, if you're individually targeted, they'd sneak in your house and they'd put a camera in your house, wouldn't they? Okay? The NSA, they've got power to do all these things. They've got billions of dollars. Okay? We can't defend against them individually, but hello. We're talking about technology security.
Sorry.
No problems, yeah. And they have there's a broad range, a wide range of attacks they have, okay? But the best solution that we have is strong and well-implemented cryptography, okay? Now, the problem is these words here, strong and well-implemented, okay? Right? Crypto maths is fine, okay? But most people don't implement it very well and they don't use it very strong, okay? Right? So, what I really wanted to talk about with some simple tools that we can use that will protect us against nearly all of those challenges that I mentioned, those examples early on, that very early slide, those different use cases. So, we've got this thing called Tor, stands for the Onion Router, okay? Provides both anonymity and privacy. It does it by moving your internet traffic, okay, across three different machines on the internet. Okay, there's an entrance node, a relay node, which is in the middle, and an exit node. Okay, and none of these nodes can see the whole path of traffic. Okay, I've got a picture coming up which shows it much easier. It's much easier to see. Okay, each of these hops. So your data enters here, then goes to a relay node, then goes to an exit node, and then it drops out the other side and ends up where you want it to be. Okay? And each of these hops only knows about what goes in and what goes out. Because there's three of them, none of them can see the whole of the journey. Okay? And it provides good anonymity, good privacy. And the NSA, they specifically mention it, okay, as a tool they're not able to de-anonymize people using Tor easily. They're not able to do it easily. And it does some other cool things too. And you can put things, you can provide things called hidden services, which I should maybe talk about near the end, because it's perhaps a bit more advanced. You should just deal with the use of Tor. So, how does Tor work? There's Alice. Alice wants to communicate with Bob over here. There's Bob's a web server. Alice is you browsing the web. Okay. And Alice's Tor client picks a random path to the web server through all the Tor nodes in the middle. Okay. Which is what I described. Okay. Alice's computer connects to a Tor entrance node. So our entrance node goes to a Tor relay node in the middle. So our relay node finds a Tor exit node, connects to the web server, and then stuff goes back. Okay? All these green lines are encrypted. Okay? So the ISP could be listening here. That's got Virgin Media or BT Internet or whatever, you know, TalkTalk, whatever. But they listen here, but all they see is encrypted communications into the Tor network. Okay. The web server over here, all it sees is a web request coming from a Tor exit node. Okay? And all the traffic through the middle is all encrypted. And this gives you good anonymity. And then when you want to make another request, okay, a little bit later on, the Tor client picks another random path. Okay, so it changes the circuit as time goes on. And it gives us really good
anonymity and privacy. Okay. So Tor's awesome. So how do we use it? You go to the Tor project, torproject.org. You download the Tor browser bundle from the Tor project.
Then you have to work out, have I really downloaded the Tor browser bundle, or have I downloaded something else? And that's difficult. So I'm not going to talk about that now. I might talk, that's what those numbers were at the beginning. Okay. Download the Tor browser bundle, you install it, you run it. But you can make mistakes, okay? You have to run, rather than configuring your web browser to use Tor, it comes with a web browser built into it that's locked down to try to protect your privacy, because there's lots of ways you can make mistakes. So, and then how do you know that you're running Tor? Well, you can go to this website here, https://check.torproject.org, and it tells you, gives you a happy smiley face if you're using Tor, gives you a big red sad thing if you're not. I'm running Tor, maybe that will work. Don't know. Anyway. That's what we would need to talk about that. Tor. So what can go wrong when we're using Tor? If we don't use the Tor browser bundle, okay? When you go to a web page, there's all sorts of stuff going inside the web browser. There's a flash movie playing in it somewhere, and you might try to download some files. Okay. All these plugins inside your web browser, they can trick. They don't have to use, unless you make effort to use Tor. Okay, they might not use it properly. Okay, so you can leak information about who you are, what traffic they're going to use. Yeah. You could be using Tor, okay, but if you log into a website, okay, if you log in with plain text, if you don't use end-to-end encryption, if the website you go to doesn't use HTTPS, okay, you're still typing your username and password in plain text, okay, and that means a powerful attacker or somebody monitoring the Tor exit node could see your username and password. Okay. So you have to make sure you use end-to-end encryption if you're going to type anything into a form somewhere on the website.
Well, excuse me, but how can you be using it in an encrypted way?
You have to use the website that uses HTTPS. There are evil Tor exit nodes that monitor all the traffic going at them and do the bad stuff with it. So you never ever log into a website using Tor and not using HTTPS.
So as long as the browser at the top says HTTPS,
So this is an example. Okay, these are some pictures here from this website, the Electronic Freedom Foundation. Okay, here's you, here's me. Okay, and here's the website I'm trying to get to. Okay, and I'm not using Tor. I'm not using HTTPS in this picture. Okay, and it's who can see what I'm doing. Okay, well, this person here who's on the Wi-Fi network that I'm on, he can see what I'm doing. Okay, my ISP, they can see what I'm doing. The NSA, they can see all the traffic. Can't see the words, so they can see everything. Okay, and the website over here, they get to see everything too. So everybody can see everything if you don't use Tor and HTTPS. Okay, if you use We just use HTTPS. We use HTTPS. The hacker here, who's on the Wi-Fi network, sitting in this room with us, you can't see the username and the password. The slide's not showing very well here, is it? Okay, but by using HTTPS, other people can't see part of the traffic, okay? And how HTTPS and Tor interact. By using both HTTPS and Tor at the same time, you get really good security. So we've got here the hacker here on the local network. You can just see that I'm using Tor, but there's just nothing else apart from that. The ISP, they just know I'm using Tor. The NSA, they can see I'm using Tor. Tough. And the site that I'm connecting to, well, I'm logged in, so they get to know who I am at that point, but they don't know where I'm coming from. So I've preserved a lot of security there. Okay? They don't see my IP address, but they don't know where I am in the world. Okay?
How many sites don't have, I mean, is it common now for sites not to have HTTPS?
Yes. Yes. Yes, okay, so...
I thought most did now.
What would you mean? Okay, so I work at a small ISP, okay, and we provide websites for people, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, and it's really difficult getting people to want to pay for that little bit extra for an HTTPS certificate when they want to secure their WordPress blog.
Right.
Okay? Next time you go and go surfing the internet, okay, and you land on somebody's blog, okay, or you've got a blog yourself perhaps.
I have.
Yeah, do you have HTTPS protecting it?
Yeah.
You do?
Network 23.
Okay, that's great.
Nice, isn't it?
That's great, yeah, that's right. So you're...
Well, I chose that, for that one of the reasons I chose that. But I'm not... So does WordPress and all those blogs not have it?
If you went to... there's more push from people to ask for those things, okay? But lots of people who are self-hosting and doing these things by themselves, okay, they don't go that little extra step and have to configure a HTTPS certificate for. Okay? Many people don't. So every time somebody logs into their blog, you know, they log in to make a change, okay? They leak their username and their password across the internet to anybody listening. Okay? Okay. So Network 23, awesome. Thank you. Fantastic.
Sorry, what is Network 23? Are they just a
web provider? Providing WordPress blogs.
Right, okay. Encrypted login and all that.
Kind of thing. No login, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so... Yeah, that's a whole different story we could talk about.
Yeah.
Right, maybe we can in a minute. Okay. So what else does Tor not do? Okay, Tor, it doesn't remove any metadata from the applications you use. Okay, if you're uploading photographs and those photographs have got EXIF information in them, okay, you know, location information can be stored in photographs. Okay, it won't take that out for you automatically. Yeah. It won't protect you from kind of web tracking cookies as you go across unless you try really hard. It won't protect you from viruses that are installed on your computer, okay, that are sniffing your key thing. It won't protect you from many, many things, okay, and this is really important, okay. It won't protect you from third-party applications on your computer, okay, directly. Tor just hides the path across the network, yeah, okay. There's this thing called the Tor Browser Bundle, and if you're going to use Tor, you should always try to use the Tor Browser Bundle. But that does it by, it blocks flash and warns about third-party applications. But you can still shoot yourself in the foot with it, yeah? A better solution is this thing. It's called Tails. And I'm running Tails on this laptop here, okay? Tails, the Amnesia Incognito Live System, that solves most of these problems around Tor usage, okay? It's really easy, okay? It's a masterclass in usable security, okay? You don't have to know any geek stuff at all. All you do... is boot from this, okay? All you do, you plug that into your computer, you boot from USB, and it runs Tails, okay? No messing about. It's all the DNS requests are passed through Tor. There's applications are Torified, okay? So there's a chat application called Pigeon, so you can do your instant messaging with people through Pigeon, okay? You can set yourself up a Java account at, say, java.ccc.de, okay? So you can do chat with people, okay? There's an email client, all goes through Tor's, called Claws, and it all goes through Tor, okay? So, you know, when you're sending and receiving your email from your friendly email server, it all goes through there. And it's got a nice thing called the metadata anonymization toolkit installed, okay? Which means that when you've got some photographs and you want to upload those photographs to the internet, okay, it'll take all that EXIF data, all that location information, or when was that photograph taken, all that kind of stuff, take it all out of there. Makes it very easy for you to do these things. It doesn't leave any traces on the PC, doesn't touch your PC hard drive at all. You boot from one of these, you boot your PC from a Tails CD or a Tails USB stick, okay? It doesn't touch the hard disk. There's no traces on your PC that you've used it, okay? And when it shuts down, it scrubs the memory. It writes randomness into the RAM chips of the PC. So if somebody takes that PC later, there's nothing left. It's fantastic. It's got some cool advanced features. You can create an encrypted location on your installation media, okay, which you can use to keep persistent data, okay. So if you want to store, say, passwords, okay, for your email client, or you want to use it to read your email and store that, you will store it on an encrypted location inside one of these sticks. You'll store, say, your bookmarks and your browser history. If you want to, you can store all those things. It'll keep it on an encrypted store on the side of one of the USB sticks. So that solved, for me, the use of Tails. It's solving nearly all these problems that we were looking back here. Okay? By using Tails, okay,
I want to separate my identity, my happy electrician identity, and my health and safety activist identity, okay? Right, so when I'm uploading some information somewhere, I'll use Tails to connect to the internet, okay? And when I'm just being normal, I'll just go and log into Facebook as I normally do, yeah? I want to leak some information about some malpractice somewhere, okay? But I don't want the corporate network that I'm on at the moment, yeah, to be able to spy into those communications, yeah? A boot from the Tails CD, okay? I connect to the network, I do my leaking like that, okay? There's no traces on the computer afterwards that I've been doing those things, okay? I want to... I want to send some. I want to connect to do some instant messaging with people. We can create accounts on an ActiveX's Java server, and we can use Tails and Torified network connections to communicate with each other. Of course, I mean, there's still problems with Tails. Okay, it uses Tor, so we have to be. We have to be aware of it, but it makes it much harder, much harder for us to shoot ourselves in the foot, yeah? It's much easier for us to use Tor and have secure communications successfully. A really interesting point is, though,
is this last one, this one here, number 8, whatever it is, it doesn't magically separate your contextual identities.
Okay, so if you're going to do some, if you always go browsing the same website, I always go to Slashdot, I go to BBC, I go to Guardian, and I go and look at some cycling websites, okay? And I always do the same thing. That's what I do on the internet all the time, okay? If I do that on the same session as then I'm logging on to some whistleblowing website and uploading some files, it might be easy for a powerful attacker to collate those traffic sessions and get an idea about who I am. Okay, now Tails makes it easy for us to solve this problem, though, because all I do is I do my normal web browsing and then I reboot. I just launch a new Tails session and I do what I want to do. I do my uploading and my whistleblowing in a separate session. Okay, and it just, you know, it won't magically separate those things out for me, but it makes it easy for me because I just have to reboot. I just have to reboot with the Tails, okay? And it will set up a new Tor connection for me. So, finally, the last thing I'd like to think about, though, is how do we know that Tails is the Tails that we think it is, okay? How do we verify it? Okay. Three ways of doing it, okay? And they go from kind of least secure but easiest to most secure but hardest. Okay, I can download the Tails CD, the Tails installer. I can download it from 10 different places. Okay, and if I get the same, and I can check the signature of that file as I download it each time. And if I get the same signature 10 times, it's probably not been interfered with, okay? But I did it from 10 different locations, yeah? Okay? But it might not be. It might be a powerful attacker has got in the middle of all those connections and give me the wrong file each time. Okay? But it does give me, you know, it's mostly likely going to be okay. The second way of doing it is, okay, well, we all run Debian on our computers, don't we? Yes?
No? Yes.
Yes.
More of them.
Yeah, okay. Well, the Tails developers have got some of the Debian developers to sign the Tails distribution, okay? With a cryptographic signature, okay? And there's instructions on the Tails website about how to tell if that cryptographic signature is a Debian signature, yeah? Okay? And you can do that, so you can trust that the Debian developers are good people. Okay? That's more secure. Or you can you can use this thing called the Web of Trust, okay? And you can generate a GPG key, and you can use it, and you can become a member of the Web of Trust, okay? And you can tell if the Tails signing key that signs the software, you can find a path through to it, okay, through the Web of Trust. And you can say, wait a minute, all these people have signed it, okay, and I verified these people too, and I trust them to not be, you know, to try to have done a good job on this, okay? And since they've signed it, I'm likely to trust it. Okay? That's probably another story. But the Web of Trust, it's a very powerful thing. It's a peer-to-peer, grassroots-based way of cryptographically authenticating people across the globe, okay? It's not top-down, it's not by corporations, okay? It's about people verifying signing keys between each other, okay? And then as people travel around the world, they can verify more and more people, so we can build this thing called the Web of Trust. It's really powerful. And if anybody would like to know more about the Web of Trust and how we can like make it stronger, okay, I'd love to talk about that with people, but perhaps not in this right here and now. And so I'm going to hand over to my colleague Chris here, because he's a bit more up to speed with, because we don't all use laptops these days, and a lot of us use handheld devices. Android devices are a lot of this. I'm going to hand over to Chris, so perhaps he can talk about some of these things. But before I do that, I'd just like to say there's free self-pre-installed Tails here. Come and take one, okay? And it really is that easy. Just boot your computer from it, and the world becomes a better place.
If you've got an Android phone, you can use Tor on an Android phone, and it's quite easy. You don't need root. You do need to enable installation of apps from untrusted locations. And the easiest way to get it is to go to f-droid.org, and f-droid is a repository for free software for Android phones, and there's an application that you can use to kind of browse and install software. Go to f-droid. You install the F-Droid client. You can then download Orbot, which is Tor for Android. And then if you're using Jelly Bean or older, i.e. not the very latest version of Android, you can use AllWeb, which is kind of quite a lightweight web browser that's set up automatically to work with Orbot. Or there's Lightning, which is a browser based on Firefox, that when you first start that up, these are all available from F-Droid, will ask if you want to use it with Tor, and that will automatically use Tor. There's a news reader that uses RSS feeds that's set up to work called Courier, that's available from the Guardian project. The Guardian project are a kind of on a project that looks at providing secure applications for people to use on Android phones, and they've got their own repository, so you can actually you can add their repository to F-Droid and install applications from the Guardian project. They're nothing to do with the Guardian newspaper, completely separate. You can set up Firefox to use if you're using another browser on a day-to-day basis on your phone. You can set up Firefox to use Tor. It's a bit fiddly because there's no GUI interface for configuring it, but it's only about three settings you need to change using about config. And there's a beta kind of development, or maybe it's alpha at the moment, plan to replace, to produce a Firefox-based web browser that will work with Allbot. The only kind of commercial, and all of these things I've just talked about, they're all free software, i.e. free open source Libre software. The only commercial application I'm aware of that you can, without rooting your phone, use with Allbot is Twitter, and you can set Twitter to use a proxy, and you don't get push notifications, so it's slightly less functional. But if you're doing activist stuff, say if you're going on a demo and you want to tweet about the demo, then you know it's a way to, you know, there were cases with Occupy Wall Street in the States where activists that were tweeting from demos were identified by the police, and then Twitter asked to hand over the IP addresses of all those people in order to work out who those people were tweeting from the demo. If you create your Twitter account only using Tor, if you only connect to it using Tor, it's going to be very hard for them to trace it back to you. So, so that's quite useful. If you root your phone, you can use Allbot has got this ability to kind of forcibly proxy applications through it. You have to be a bit careful with that, because if Allbot crashes for any reason and your application is still running, it'll start not running through Allbot. So to do that securely, I'd recommend you use a firewall. So also available from F-Droid, there's a thing called AFWall, which is just an Android firewall. And so what you can do with that, you can set up your application so it has no internet access normally. It's blocked by the firewall. And then you force it to go via Tor, and then that way, Tor crashes, and it does occasionally, and isn't running, your connection isn't going to go out, not via Tor. There's in the blurb for this talk on the Anarchist Bookfare website, there's a link to a PDF from Press Freedom Foundation that's about using. A lot of it's about using chat with activist groups, and how if you all get together and use something like Chat Secure that uses Java, you will verify your fingerprints and stuff. It will basically go through the steps of how you can set up very secure chat amongst a group of activists. You set it up face to face, and then you go away and chat securely, and it's all quite good. I'd also recommend encrypting your phone and using quite a strong passphrase for that. It can be a bit inconvenient because you can't use just the swipe thing to unlock your phone. There is an application available on F-Droid that allows you to set a different encryption passphrase and have a different unlock key. And if you do that, then you need to actually make sure you've powered off your phone before you hand it to the police, because then they can't basically access the data. And I would, you know, recommend doing that, because a lot of the time they're just going to be looking at what's on your phone to try and incriminate you. And it's only in rare situations that they're going to use the full force of the law to force you to hand over your encryption passphrase. So I think we're kind of running out of time. I should stop now, because we've only got 15 minutes for discussion.
Has anybody got any questions there, or any issues you'd like to raise? I mean, what I could just do, I'd just do a quick demonstration of booting from, I don't know if everybody saw it at the beginning, booting from this, okay, because it's quite good here, because if I just ask this to reboot, we'll see it should shut down. Okay, it's shut down, now it's going to The screen's going to go funny at the top, so it's going to wipe the memory. Probably. There we go. Yeah, well, okay, you can't see it on the monitor. Okay, but on my laptop, the screen's going a bit funny at the top. It's just wiped the RAM. Okay, I think we should reboot. I might have to persuade it to reboot from the USB.
Did you come in too late to hear the beginning of this?
Yes, I'm sorry. Just
to explain, he's talking about this system called Tails, but you run it entirely off the USB stick,
and
everything's secure.
Okay, so I'm just going to boot from the little USB stick. Okay, it's going to boot. Looks like Linux booting. Been developing, Tails has been getting developed for 5-6 years maybe now, okay?
One of the interesting things to note about Tails from the kind of Snowden leaks is that it was specifically identified as a thing that made it hardest for the NSA and GCHQ to track people. And also another interesting thing about it is it was actually for not very tech savvy people like Graham Greenwald, it was the only way he was actually able to do anything securely. He's found it impossible to do anything in a remotely secure way until he started using Tails.
It's a real success for cryptography, you know what I mean? Journalists can use it now, yeah, it's fantastic. This is like, you know, this is the real thing. Okay, so I've got I've configured this one to have a persistent volume. I told you about the persistent volume, yeah, which is an encrypted container on mine. Okay, these aren't configured like that, so they don't give you this extra use persistence. Okay, but I could say use persistence, and now to decrypt that, I can remove the passphrase, and there's a whole bunch of other things that you can. I would normally just click on no more options and go forward, but we'll look at the other options that are here. Okay. And I forgot to change the language settings at the bottom. That's annoying. Anyway, by default, Tails doesn't come with a root password, okay? Which means it can't be it can't be modified, okay? Because you need to have a root password, an administrative password to modify it, okay? So it kind of makes it more secure, okay? But if I wanted to install extra software to my Tails installation, I can add a root password. But boot, okay? That's not persistent, it would just be for this session, okay? This is quite cute. We can make it look like Windows XP, okay? So you're using it an internet cafe or something like that. You boot from Tails, make it look like Windows XP. That's quite cute. And by default, it spoofs the MAC address, so it changes the MAC address of my network card, okay? So that doesn't uniquely identify my computer any longer, okay? So I'll just log in then. I'm just logging in with default settings here, yeah? And it should, a second or two, give me some kind of desktop will pop up. Yeah. Okay, so it's built on a relatively old version of Linux at the moment. The new version is coming soon. Okay, so the desktop looks a little bit dated, perhaps. Okay. I can connect to wireless networks here, so I'm going to try and connect to the showroom network. Okay. The showroom will see me as a... Now, this is quite interesting, actually, because the showroom's network, okay, blocks all outgoing traffic until you authenticate against it. Okay, there's a captive portal, we call them, on the wireless network. Okay, so they've got... Within Tails, there's a thing called the unsafe browser, okay, which doesn't use Tor at all. Okay, it just connects directly through. Okay, so what I have to do, I have to launch the unsafe browser... Okay, which will pop up in a bit, and this doesn't anonymize you in any way whatsoever. Okay, the unsafe browser. Okay, so you only use the point of the unsafe browser is to connect to the local network in case you have to authenticate against that somehow. Okay, and it takes a while to start up.
Which I presume that can't happen if you use the Tor browser.
No, because the Tor browser, it's all encrypted to start off with and going somewhere. Okay, but it gets us going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It pops up, it's all red and scary looking, so you know not to use it, generally.
The authentication website for the show is obviously on the local area network.
Yeah.
And you can't use Tor to access anything on the local area network, because it's scaring out the internet.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So I'm going to connect to, like, I'm going to try to connect to some random website, like bbc.co.uk. This is the showroom's blocking page, yeah, so I've got to get through this first. I log in, I'm going to put in a fake at, I've got the wrong keyboard, let's just put in some random email address and hope it works. Okay, so that's authenticating me to the local network now, and it'll just take a in now, okay? Again, because the outgoing, there's like a firewall between on the showroom network to the internet, okay? And they only let through some traffic, okay? So, but Tor's smart, okay? It's smarter than that, okay? And they will let through HTTPS traffic, okay? Because it's difficult, it's mostly impossible to transparently interfere with HTTPS traffic, okay? So my Tor client right now, it's trying to connect to a Tor entrance node, yeah? But it has to find one that's running on port 443, same as HTTPS. So it'll take a little bit longer to connect than it normally does, okay? But eventually, I'll get a little green onion will pop up on the, and it'll tell me that I'm connected. And it does work because we've just been using it, okay? So it just takes a little while to get going. But to say this really is, okay, this easy, okay? This easy. Just boot from a USB. Preparing these USB sticks is a little more complicated, okay? That's why we pre-prepared them, okay? But once you've got them prepared, and it's not that complicated either, okay? There's instructions on the Tails website, so you can do it yourself. You don't have to trust me, okay? You can do it yourself. But it really is just boot this USB and you've just given yourself a whole layer more security than you were doing before.
Just a simple question. You're going to give us one of them today?
Yes, please, yeah.
Did we just do a copy of that onto another USB stick to hand to a friend? Would that work?
There's a process, so my Tor network has now come up, okay? Okay, there's a process to create a new one of these, okay? And I could just do one now, okay? So once you've got one of these pre-installed, okay, here's some we haven't prepared earlier. So I could just find my way into this thing. Here's one that's not been pre-prepared, okay? So I'd stick that in there, like so. And then applications, Tails, Tails installer, okay. Well, and what I want to do, I want to clone and install, okay. And this will delete all the data that's on this thing, okay. There'll be nothing left on it. It'll just be a vanilla Tails installation. When I finish, okay, and it's that easy, okay, this easy, okay. The people who are designing this, they've put a lot of effort into making stuff easy, 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 easy. I think that's the key thing to take out of this. It's
what about upgrades, security upgrades? Is it cool?
They release a new version of Tails every now and again, so yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. I think by default, the nature of the installation is that you can't change the files that are on the installation because there's no root user, okay? There's no way to escalate your privileges to be able to do that. And a lot of effort's been put into locking things down, okay? But they do produce updates. This is Tails version 1.00 something or other, and there's a 1.1 coming out. And there's a process where you can either generate a new installation or you can upgrade that installation, okay. And it's kind of, yeah, it's that easy. So for me, I want everybody to take one of these. There's a little piece of paper that's got some instruction on it, and I want you to give them to more people and tell more people about how awesome it is and how simple it is, because it's awesome and it's simple. And we should all be used. So,
if I send an email to someone on Tails, you know, it's encrypted, and then they open it on their browser and they
Well, that's kind of slightly more complicated, okay? Because the way email works, okay? So you've got email's got and it's got two components, really. So it's got your email client, and there's the post office you use, your email server.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
And when you send email, your email client puts the email and sends it to the post office, the email server, and then the post offices share between each other. Okay? Then your email server delivers it to the recipient's post office, email server, and then their email client connects and reads it. Okay?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of steps going in there. Okay? What Tor will do, what Tails will do, it will protect the connection between your email client and your email server if your email server is using secure protocols. Okay, so if you've got a RiseUp address, say, because you're like Network 23 kind of person perhaps, yeah, RiseUp, big effort, they put big effort into making sure that things are secure. Okay, so RiseUp will only support secure protocols for email. Yeah, okay, but if you were going to, I don't know, gmx.de or something sort of like another email provider, you were sending an email to somebody at another email provider and they weren't still up on secure protocols, some of that email will travel across in plain text. Okay?
Yeah.
So it's better to try to get all your friends onto a nice secure activist server, but not all the same one.
Just do a thing to that, you've got to encrypt your email as well.
Yes,
you don't want
yeah.
anybody else to see.
Well, this is what I'm saying.
If you don't encrypt your email,
they need to encrypt email, does it?
No, that's right. No, fantastic. Actually, that's a really good point. Thank you, though. Yeah, that's. So there's a tool called GPG. GPG stands for GNU Privacy Guard. Okay, and it encrypts the contents of emails. Okay,
yeah.
And you can generate that number, that long number I showed you at the beginning. Okay. Yeah, okay, that's my fingerprint for my email, okay? And there's things called key servers, okay? So when you generate a key for your email, you can upload your key to a key server, and other people can find it. But you have to get it signed, the key then signed by other people, because it's better to get it into the web of trust, and people know it's really your key and not something fake. So there's a whole story about kind of GPG and email encryption, which is a different story to what we've been talking about today. But it's also a good story, and the more people do that, the better. I'll be happy to. I've been, but that's a whole different story.
That's a talk in itself, actually.
Yeah, it's good.
We've got 2 minutes before the next talk starts.
Okay. Well, anyway, come and
take one of these. Take one of the pieces of paper.